This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
There was a lot of people there with brothers or fathers or mothers in prison or their kids in prison, too. It's a cycle that is self-perpetuating.
For many of us, the holiday season presents an opportunity to spend some time thinking about people less fortunate than ourselves. This week on Sea Change Radio, we spotlight a story of hope, determination, and redemption. Our guest is Christine Yu, the director and producer of the new documentary film, 26.2 to Life, which takes viewers into the San Quentin Prison Marathon and 1,000 Mile Club. We learn about the inspiration behind the film, discuss the challenges of long-distance running behind bars, and look at what the film reveals about our prison system and the effect it has on millions. I'm joined on Sea Change Radio by my high school classmate, Christine Yu. Chris is the director and producer of the new documentary film, 26.2 to Life. Christine, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hey, Alex, how are you? Glad to be here.
First, why don't you give us a brief synopsis of 26.2 to Life, and then I want to dive into how you came about the project, because it's really a labor of love. Took 6 years, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Six long, very long years. So 26.2 to Life, it takes you inside the San Quentin Prison Marathon, and it explores the transformative power of running through the lens of the prison's running club, which is called the 1,000 Mile Club. And within this club that is organized by these volunteers who are elite marathon runners that go into the prison throughout the year to coach a group of incarcerated men, they train so that every November they run a 26.2 mile marathon entirely behind the prison walls, 105 laps around this prison yard. But more than running, the film really explores what led these men to the starting line at San Quentin and highlights their rehabilitative journeys to define themselves, you know, to be more than their crime.
So how did you get interested in this project? And how did you decide which characters you were going to follow as the story unfolded in front of you?
So my relationship with the prison system started more than 20 years ago. I had a friend who was also fellow Korean American who was wrongfully convicted, and he was sentenced to 271 years in California State Prison. It really impacted me a lot. I knew his whole family and how devastating it was for them. And he was somebody that I felt basically could have been my brother. You know, we had like the same type of family vacations, you know, grew up very similarly. Our fathers went to the same school in Korea. And so because of his incarceration, I really started to wonder what does that look like? If you know you're going to die in prison, I mean, how do you actually carry out a life? You know, because people still need to find a way to live. So what does that really actually look like for people? So I guess basically the opportunity to explore that question came to me in 2016. I woke up one morning and I saw this magazine article in GQ, and it said the San Quentin Marathon, and it just immediately captured my imagination. I'm not a marathoner, but I am a runner. And so I could see how people could gain a sense of freedom or a sense of well-being by running. So I immediately contacted the coach. I did an online research to find whatever I could find. I reached out to Coach Frank, who lives in Novato, California, Marin County, and basically drove up to meet him immediately and told him why I was interested in this topic. And originally I was going to do it as a regular motion picture, you know, because that was more my background. I had more of a narrative background. But he told me I had competition as well. So Condé Nast had also approached him to do a motion picture. And I thought for sure, you know, he was going to end up going with them. But I just kind of left him and I just said, look, you know, this is like a classic David and Goliath fight, but you know, they probably have 50 projects in development. I will, you know, devote myself to give all my concentration to this project. And, you know, we all know who won that fight in the end. And I left back down to LA convinced that I'm sure that I wasn't going to get it. And then he called me up a week later and said that he wanted to go with me. And so I went into the prison for a half marathon event. That was like the first time I was going into San Quentin. And again, I was going to do this as a regular movie. So I basically went in there with I got permission to go in there with a pad of paper and a pencil.
And it was that with the help of Frank, or you had to go through the whole system independently?
Yeah, so he got me gate cleared to go in with the volunteers to just observe a half marathon event. This was in 2016. So the minute I start walking down into the yard and they're all gathering for the start of the marathon, I mean, it felt very festive. You know, and I was like, wow, there's like a kind of a feel good feeling going on right now. There's like this, you know, fun community like atmosphere. Like it felt like a picnic or something.
Yeah, you get that feeling in the film, like people are really cheering each other on.
Yeah. And I'm like, but wait, but we're in a prison. You know, I mean, this is a really weird juxtaposition of feelings. And I wanted to explore that. And so then I just started talking with other guys. And over the course of the next few months, I started talking with, you know, of course, different coaches and volunteers and guys who had been released. And I sort of just could not believe all of the things that I was hearing and seeing and felt that I needed to get out of the way and tell this story as a documentary. So that's just kind of where it started.
Yes, I thought it was very effective how you get into their stories a little later, but the first reminder that this isn't just a fun, feel-good story is they're starting a marathon, then all of a sudden there's a lockdown or a yard down. And also you're doing an interview with somebody a few minutes later in the film, and they're like, oh, wait, that's an alarm, I have to sit down. And they're like, it's almost like a timeout for an elementary school kid or something like that. It felt so infantilizing to me that somebody, I can understand the protocols that go into that, but it was a stark reminder that this is not just the YMCA's annual turkey trot.
Yeah, sure. And then, yeah, so when these alarms go off, and it could be for any reason, you know, any outbreak that might be going on in the prison or some medical alarm or something like that. And sort of what accentuates it even more is that as an outsider, as a free person, you have to remain standing. You know, so also that guards can see immediately who is a free person and who is incarcerated.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
That's also why you wear different clothing, too, when you go inside the prison. So, like, the guys, they wear blue. The guards, they wear green. The new people that come in wear orange. So there's a lot of colors that are just completely off limits to you as an outsider when you go in. So, you know, we always kind of made it simple, and I always told people to wear all black. But there's always invariably someone on the crew who doesn't quite get the memo and shows up in blue jeans. So I got accustomed to keeping, you know, an extra set of sweatpants in the car for someone to change into. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to go in.
If you don't look into your mind, not what you're running from. Tomorrow might be just another day to run. If you just sit and waste your time, you'll be going where you're coming from. Think about that. Tomorrow might be just another day.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Christine Yu. She is the producer and director of the new documentary film, 26.2 to Life. So, Christine, let's talk about some of these people, some of the stars of the film, and their journeys, and view how running and the Thousand Mile Club affected their outcomes.
I knew, just from my own personal experience with running, how running can make someone feel better. How after you do it, you always feel better about yourself. But what I didn't really realize then, what I know now, was really the impact of the running community to make personal and social transformation. So a lot of these guys, you know, they would tell me over and over that they started to run because, you know, they just wanted to lose weight or, you know, get in better shape or just do something healthy. But what happens is, you know, a lot of these people in prison, obviously, I mean, they are considered society's failures, you know, who haven't accomplished a whole hell of a lot in life. So what happens is that when they complete their first 5 miles, suddenly they've actually done something that they've never been able to do before. So what happens? They get a lot of confidence. And with that confidence then that they can go out then and do, it inspires them to get their, finish getting their GED or reconnect with family members, or, you know, it leads to a whole host of other positive activities that, which is, I believe, the reason why that out of all of the released members of the club, there is a 0% recidivism rate. Compare that to the national average, which is 67%, you know, after 5 years.
Even with violent criminals?
Oh, yeah. Most of the people in San Quentin that I interviewed and that were participating in the film are considered, quote unquote, violent felons.
Right. No, I mean, that 67% recidivism rate. I know that homicide is a much lower recidivism rate than people assume.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times with lifers, recidivism rates can be very, very low overall, you know, a few percentage points. But that's also because more than not, lifers end up spending at least a decade behind bars. And there is a lot of data that shows that as people get older, they age out of crime. You know, I mean, you don't do the same things you did when you were 18 or 19, right? I certainly don't. But those are the acts, of course, that people are imprisoned and held accountable for, or, you know, what the prison system has been set up to hold them accountable for. But like the natural aging process, you know, people do age out of those behaviors. So, but that is why also mandatory minimum sentencing, which, you know, came in during the tough on crime era, which is what has caused this whole ballooning of created mass incarceration as we know it.
How did your perception of the prison system change from when your friend was imprisoned to going through this journey with these incarcerated individuals over the last 6 years of making the film?
Well, I think when my friend was locked up, I mean, I felt really powerless to do anything. I was incredibly depressed. How does an individual deal and interact with the prison system? What can one individual do? But that is really why I felt that the story of the Thousand Mile Club was incredibly empowering, and felt that that's really why it needed to be seen and shared with more people. Coach Frank Rona, the head coach, he began coaching at the club in 2005. And over a few years, he started gathering a community of other runners who would come in to help him coach. And over this time, I mean, now the club has been going, you know, on for 18 years. There is a whole community of people that has been created both inside that now has this ripple effect and continuity for people on the outside, which again, I think that's why that it contributes to the 0% recidivism rate. And it really showed me what one person can do. He didn't go into this as any kind of social change maker or even a prison advocate in any way. I mean, he was always actually like a voting Republican, though, you know, criminal justice and prison issues is something that people on both sides of the aisle can a lot of times get behind for very different reasons, but it is an area of commonality. But, you know, I think just through his humanity, he was able to bring people into this through his really sheer passion for running. You know, not only have the men been transformed, but I would say the volunteers have all been equally transformed by the experience. So it really was an empowering story for me to be able to really highlight the power of what one individual can do to create community and ultimately change, I mean, from the ground level up in the most real of ways.
Lord, something wrong. What you must have done something wrong. Why you can't find where you belong. Well, well, well. Don't say that, cause I'm running not running away.
Ooh. Running away.
Got to protect my life.
Running away.
And I don't want to live with no strife.
Running
it's
away.
It's better to live in the house too.
Running
and to
away.
Live in the house full of confusion. So
running
I
away.
Made my decision and I left you.
Running
and
away.
Now you're coming to tell me that I'm
running away,
but it's not true.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Christine Yu. She is the producer and director of the new documentary film 26.2 to Life. So, Chris, let's talk about race a little bit in the film. You explain how the prison population is kind of self-segregating in some ways. There's the Native American group, there's the Latino group, there's the white skinheads. How do you think the running club was a way to kind of bring people together within that population? And on a larger societal sense, what kind of conclusions can one draw about an activity, a community-driven activity, in any kind of non-prison format?
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, you know, prison by nature is a highly segregated society. You know, that's how they splinter off into groups and organize that way. I mean, people don't have to stay within their race. That's like an unspoken but actually spoken kind of rule of how it all operates. However, in a place like San Quentin, where there are tons of, you know, different rehabilitative programming available for people, within the groups, there's usually mixed races, you know, so people from all different backgrounds participate in these self-help groups and athletic programs. However, you know, a lot of athletic programs, similarly there, are team sports. And so a lot of the team sports also break down into are self-segregated. But I think the beauty of running is that it is an individualized sport. And so probably, I mean, out of the athletics, it is the most integrated club in the prison. Now, when people leave these clubs, leave these groups, they still go off and they are self-segregating. But in a place like San Quentin, where, again, there are so many programs, you do see a mix of races. You know, I also volunteer at the media center. You know, that's what I actually really loved again about the Thousand Mile Club, is that it really showed me that this is a group of people that have managed to transcend prison politics to, you know, be together in community. And I thought, wow, you know, if these guys can do it, you know, what's going on with us out here in the free world? And San Quentin is unlike any other prison in the state of California, if not perhaps the world. You know, they call it the Harvard of prisons, the University of San Quentin, you know, for that reason.
And not even thinking about the beautiful view that they get. I mean, it's an amazing piece of property. And then there's lots of programs, like Ear Hustle is the most famous publication now coming from this, until 26.2 to Life came out. But it seems like a very highly functional place as prisons go.
Yeah, as prisons go. I mean, it's literally right on the bay in the Bay Area. And so when you walk from the front gate to the Sallyport entrance into like the end of the prison facility itself, it's about a quarter mile strip along the bay. And it's probably one of the most beautiful walks out there.
Yeah, no, it is. It's kind of why, one of the reasons why I think Alcatraz is so iconic, because it's like, wow, these people are stuck on this island and they have to just look longingly at this beautiful city.
But on the other hand, like, you know, at least they get a view. And there are a lot of places they don't at all. You know, I mean, the weird thing about San Quentin is that because it is the oldest prison, it has this, you know, Spanish mission style architecture. Comparatively to any other prison you're going to see in the state of California, except for maybe Old Folsom, I mean, which are basically cinder blocks, 4 inches by 4 feet windows. I mean, these places look extremely institutional. And San Quentin at least has that variety as far as prison variety is going to go.
But you give a glimpse into the cells, and that's a pretty good reminder that this is no Hilton.
No, it's no Walk in the Park. And that was very important for us to show, because we do spend a lot of time out into the yard, and I did not want people to think that, hey, these guys just get to like run around and, you know, spend all day running. You know, they do go back to the reality of being in 4x9 cells, and it's two people. It's basically, imagine you and another guy living in your bathroom.
Yeah, it's just, it seemed very cramped even just watching it. It made me feel a little claustrophobic. I can't imagine what it's like. And this is not considering solitary as well.
You know you're the mastermind. Run, run, Rudolph. Randolph ain't too far behind. Run, run, Rudolph. Santa's gotta make it to town. Santa, make him hurry. Tell him he can take the freeway down. Run, run, Rudolph, 'cause I'm reeling like a merry-go-round.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Christine Yu. Her new film is 26.2 to Life. Do you think that their participation in the Thousand Mile Club, the ones whose sentences were commuted, do you think it accelerated their release?
You know, when people take up the sport of long-distance running, traces of it end up going into all different areas of their life. You know, so the benefits are decreased anger, better sleep, teaching discipline and time management, learning to take on challenges, knowing that you can complete a goal, a task. You know, there's a phrase that you hear in prison a lot called, people say, hurt people, hurt people, because it's a cycle of violence that perpetuates itself. You very quickly realize that most people are in prison because of systemic poverty, systemic racism. You know, usually people don't have access to good education, have unstable family environments.
Drug addiction.
And drug addiction, you know, and they're all interrelated. And a lot of that, again, has to do with multi-generational incarceration. There was a lot of people there with brothers or fathers or mothers in prison, or their kids in prison, too. It's a cycle that is self-perpetuating. So, you know, a lot of people who are in San Quentin are there to rehabilitate themselves, to strive for more, to strive for better for themselves. So they're trying to break that cycle of violence for themselves and find a new way of life, you know, expressed through running. Because, you know, they will tell me, you know, the minute that you start running, suddenly you start caring about what you eat, what you put in your body. You don't want to do drugs, you know. And people in prison have all kinds of choices just like that we do out here. Same thing. You can get drugs in prison. You can get all that stuff in prison. So, you know, that's also one of the reasons why, say, for example, we've been contacted by prisons all over the country that actually want this film, to see this film, and asking us for help to organize new running clubs, you know, actually across the country. So, say, for example, in the state of North Dakota, it's my understanding from their Department of Corrections that about 80% of that population have been locked up due to drug-related crimes.
80%.
And again, wow. Because of there is a running club at Missouri River County Correction Center. And so, again, they experience very low recidivism rates. So that's why they want to screen the film in, like, prisons across that state. It's this idea of, okay, well, we can replace the addictive high with a runner's high. You know, right now the film is playing every day across California's 32 prisons. It's accessible to the 95,000 people, men, women, and children that are locked up in the state. Every day at 4 o'clock, which is count time in prison. So that's like prime time. and so we've just actually received word that there's a new club that started in Salinas Valley Prison. One is started by the San Francisco Probation Office. And so in 2024, a lot of what we're doing is going to be furthering our social impact goals to bring the film to more facilities across the country. And we'll be creating like a How to Form a Prison Running Club handbook, and we'll have support from different corporate sponsors that we're working with to provide potentially new club starter kits of, you know, shoes and a digital clock, and then along with the handbook. We're not suggesting that, you know, certainly running is going to solve the mass incarceration problem, but it is what it's certainly, I feel, a step in the right direction. It is a very low barrier for entry for prisons to adopt rehabilitation programs. And what these screenings do is that it puts us directly in a direct interaction and conversation with prison administrations to hopefully adopt more a rehabilitative approach. Because a lot of prisons, of course, don't have any rehabilitation programs.
The film is 26.2 to Life. Christine Yu, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex, for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Bill Withers, Bob Marley, and Chuck Berry. To read a transcript of this show, go to seachangeradio.com. Stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast on our site or visit our archives to hear from Doris Kearns Goodwin, Gavin Newsom, Stuart Brand, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.